This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Flying by another milestone at breakneck speed.
There it is, Dow 25,000.
Shazam. The Dow soared 152 points to close above 25,000 for the first time ever.
The most impressive milestone yet for the Dow Jones Industrial Average, 25,000. It's a psychological mark, but shows the explosive growth in stocks over the past year.
Hi, everybody. I'm going over with the senators. We're going to Camp David. We have a lot of things to work on, a lot of things to accomplish. The stock market is up very, very big today. We've set new records, and I think they'll be continued to set. The tax cuts are really kicking in far beyond what anyone thought. Numerous companies have today come out and announced that they're going to make big payments to their employees, something that nobody really had in mind. So we're very honored by it. But the market is good. The jobs reports were very good, and we think they're going to get really good over the next couple of months. So again, we're going to Camp David with a lot of the great Republican senators, and we're making America great again. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Sir, should Steve Bannon be fired? Should Steve Bannon be fired, sir?
Welcome to Washington Watch, powered by the Family Research Council. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Tony is the president of the Family Research Council, and I'm the program's producer and 30-year media veteran. It's a pleasure to be with you once again. Tony is on vacation with his family, taking some time off. Well, a jam-packed news day, as you heard. The Dow Jones Industrial Average broke above 25,000 for the first time on Thursday. It was up even higher today, tying the fastest 1,000-point move in its history. Of course, the mainstream media, they just want to talk about Steve Bannon. But following the release of a stronger than expected jobs data, freshman Congresswoman Claudia Tenney of New York will be here for the very first time, never been on the program, to help us take a look at the growing economy and how little it's getting reported on by the mainstream media. And the new Countries of Particular Concern report is out. Christina Arriaga, vice chairwoman of the United States Commission on International Religious Freedom, will be here. You know, this is a big issue for the Family Research Council. We like to keep you informed about what's going on. And this is the list of the world's worst violators of religious freedom. We'll talk about those nations, who's on and who's off. And this next story, well, just makes me so saddened for today's youth. A transgender crusader spoke at an all-school assembly at George Mason High School in Falls Church, a city in Northern Virginia, this past December. Just so much propaganda being dosed out to our kids these days in the public schools. Kathy Roos, a senior fellow of legal studies at the Family Research Council, will be here to help us unpack. And hey, we want to send a shout out to our listeners. There's bunch of you all across the nation. This program's heard on 225 stations. Thank you for your generous support in December in our year in giving and our matching grant effort. You were troopers. You were awesome. Thank you. In this content, you like what you're hearing, you want to listen while you're working out on the treadmill or whatnot, you can go to tonyperkins.com. You can also follow Tony on Twitter at T Perkins. That's at T Perkins. You can follow me on Twitter at Russ Jones Speaks. Well, with us now is Claudia Tenney. She represents the 22nd Congressional District of New York, a freshman member of Congress elected in 2016. She serves on the U.S. House of Representatives Financial Services Committee, an accomplished attorney and longtime small business owner. Congresswoman Claudia, welcome to Washington Watch.
Us as well.
Claudia?
Hello?
Hi, welcome.
Yeah, hi. Oh, thank you for being on. I thought you were, it's an honor to be on. It's my first, my maiden voyage here, so glad to have the opportunity.
Thank you so much, and appreciate what you're doing in Washington, D.C. And we wanted to talk about the economy today, and you are serving on the Financial Services Committee since Donald Trump has been in the White House. Wall Street has seen record highs, and today we learned we added 2 million jobs in 2017. And, of course, yesterday the Dow hit 25,000. Can I just get your reaction on that, and what are your thoughts, and what are you seeing?
Well, Well, it's such a relief, and I come from high tax New York, which is one of the worst economies in the nation, because for the all the opposite reasons. You know, we tax, we spend, we have put in so many progressive programs that have literally plummeted New York to one of the worst states to do business in, one of the highest tax states, and just on the Freedom Index, we're probably dead last, and we're always tied for last or dead last with New Jersey. So it's tough going, and we have it's looking great. Things are starting to come around. I'm one of the out of the New York State delegation. There are 9 Republicans out of 27. The sad thing is, at one point, I think New York had almost 50 representatives, but we've lost so much population. And then this has been accelerated by Andrew Cuomo, our governor, who wants to run for president, who we've lost over 1 million jobs, and we have the largest out-migration of people and jobs. And yet we were able to come up with something, you know, a lot of hair on fire from Andrew Cuomo about the tax bill and how we're raising taxes and we're, you know, targeting New York State. But guess what Andrew Cuomo came out with the other day? He said, I think it's time for us to eliminate the personal income tax in New York. Yay. It's something that I introduced as a member of the state assembly that was like roundly rejected because everyone said, oh, you can't do that. And I think I don't know what he's going to try to figure out a way to fill up the $4 billion hole and some of the issues we have there. But I think it's going to be good. I'm a small business owner. I spent the day. I'm on my way back from a whole day in Binghamton, New York, which was where IBM, iconic IBM, was founded, although not doing great on the Dow right now. But this is an area that was really at the founding of many companies and great companies that we know of in our world that we've lost. We're the Rust Belt of New York. And so seeing this tax reform and giving a needed boost to the economy, to our job creators, our small business owners like my family business and many others, giving a chance for our family farms to continue to survive and hopefully thrive as we do more to roll back regulations. I just think it's been a banner year in so many ways. And yet New York State has done nothing to contribute to the benefits, but yet our federal tax policy is helping us.
Well, and maybe you can be a part of that change, but wouldn't you say it's safe to say the economy is fully recovered? Can we go that far?
I don't know if it's fully recovered. I think that we're on the march to grow and move forward. I think we can go a lot farther than we are. Obviously, you're seeing a lot of the benefits of some of the initiatives and how successful and productive this year was. I know we get blamed a lot and they call us the do-nothing Congress, but the House of Representatives was one of the most productive in decades this year. And yeah, we didn't get everything passed, and there's a lot waiting to go into the Senate. But the tax reform, rolling back regulations, reforming and making the VA, the Veterans Administration, more accountable, that matters to me. My son is a Naval Academy graduate and an active duty Marine right now, just got captain a couple days ago.
Wonderful.
And so, you know, thank you. We are so committed to our veterans. We have a large veterans community up here in upstate New York. We once had Griffiths Air Force Base that was closed under BRAC about 25 years ago. So we've been trying to recover from that as well. But I think there's ways, more places we can go. I think we're going to continue to improve. I love the numbers. I love 2 million jobs. I love the idea that we have now finally seeing the labor participation rate going up. We're seeing companies giving out not just bonuses, but wages are being raised without being forced by government. And that's happening. And that's something that's noteworthy in New York. Andrew Cuomo instituted a $15, it's actually a 3-tiered minimum wage, with 15 being the top rate in New York City, and 13 and 12 throughout the rest of the country, way above the federal standard, which is, you know, hurts local businesses, hurts the small business owners, our job creators. And so we're fighting up against that battle. But I think you're seeing like wages come up even with, you know, just because of the companies seeing that they're going to be reinvesting back in our communities. I know in my area, so many iconic businesses, Remington Arms, Revere Manufacturing, started by none other than Paul Revere, our famous patriot. We have a lot of great companies that were part of this region. Some have survived and many have had to leave because of New York's very unfriendly business climate.
There are some people out there that say it doesn't matter that the Dow hit 25,000, but doesn't it reflect a major stock rally? Just listen to this quick clip. Mark Yusko, CEO of Morgan Creek Capital Management, he said this on Bloomberg.
No relevance at all. It's just another round number. Everyone's going to put a big number or big attention to it, but it's just a number.
It's just a number. But in reality,
let me tell you something. If Barack Obama were the president, they would not stop talking about it. They would not stop. They would talk about how, see, look what's happening. And it is just one factor, but I cited a number of others. Labor participation, job growth, wage increase, a lot of other factors that are going into the growth of the economy, companies making reinvestment back into the United States, something that the president ran on. And quite frankly, I've run on since I was in office. I got first elected in 2010 as a member of the New York State Assembly, trying to fight for our small business community. And, happy to report that I have a 100 rating from the National Federation of Independent Business because I've been a member for almost 30 years. And they like the tax reform as well. And they're putting out surveys and showing just how well our small businesses are doing. And what's really tragic about this is the media, and as you say, not focused on the good things. They're talking about tax reform, saying that the millionaires and billionaires are the ones that are going to get all the benefits. And then the middle income taxpayers are all going to take the hit while we enrich the wealthy. The truth is, I'm getting so many people that are middle income, teachers, corrections officers, privately contacting me to say, hey, guess what? I'm getting a $4,000 back after next year. I'm getting $3,400. I'm getting $1,950. They're all saying, wow, I'm really getting a tax cut. They're not really telling us the truth. I'm like, yes, they're not telling you the truth. And I think this is going to be a really interesting issue as we move forward. And more people are starting to see their paychecks increase because the taxes are going down. And more people seeing what's happening as far as their tax liability and their ability to keep their own money, to use their money for what they want to do and not be forced to in a confiscatory tax framework that we have, especially in New York.
And don't you think just over the next few months, people are really, they're going to see the truth themselves just through their own income. Like you said, their paychecks, they're going to see their tax returns. They're going to see the reality of what's happening here in these bonuses and how that money gets plowed back into the local economy. People are going to see the truth.
Exactly. And you know what I find really interesting is Bernie Sanders, our socialist stalwart of the United States, independent, actually admitted, the middle income taxpayers are getting a tax cut. This guy's worried about his image, and he had to tell the truth. He wasn't going to lie to his supporters and say, hey, Bernie, I got money back. So you know what, though? He said, we've got to make these permanent. And I said, I am all for making the personal side of this permanent. So I'm going to be joining some of my colleagues. Rodney Davis is the first one to put it out. We all tried to run to it to do a permanent tax cut for the personal side of this. And then hopefully Bernie Sanders and all these Democrats will join in and make it permanent since they're complaining. We need to make it permanent. It's never going to be good enough for them. And you watch, when we put this bill on the floor and we say, here we are, we're making the personal tax cuts permanent, suddenly Democrats who've increased the deficit to record levels in years past under the Obama administration are becoming deficit hawks now. And then they're going to say, oh, geez, we got to do more. But I'd love to make it permanent. I think it's what we need to do next year.
Well, Congresswoman Claudia Tinney of New York, we're out of time. Thank you so much on this Friday. I know you're busy heading back, and we'll look forward to watching for you on the Hill next week as the House returns to Washington, D.C. Thanks so much for being on Washington Watch.
Thank
we'll have you,
Russ.
Back.
I appreciate it. Have a great night.
All right. Have a great year. Well, I'm Russ Jones sitting in for Tony Perkins. You are listening to Washington Watch. And coming up next, the State Department has named the world's worst violators of religious freedom. When we return, we'll talk with Christina Arriaga, Vice Chairwoman of the United States Commission on International Religious Freedom.
What does sex trafficking, abortion, and pornography have in common? A lot, as it turns out, and all three are on the rise across the world. Today, almost 45.8 million people live in slavery around the world, and around 4.5 million people are slaves in the sex industry. Those who consume pornography are much more likely to seek women for paid sex, many of whom are victims of sex trafficking. Each click of pornography creates demand for more pornography and brings in a profit to the sex industry. The demand causes traffickers, pimps, and those involved in the sex industry to abuse their victims by filming them in sex acts. To learn more about the link between these issues and to find out how you can help stop it, go to frc.org/traffic. Again, that's frc.org/traffic.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. Across the nation, transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. The problem for these activists is that the evidence is not on their side. In 2016, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services examined 33 studies on the subject and declared that there was not enough evidence to determine whether gender reassignment surgery improved health outcomes. One study found that those who had undergone gender reassignment surgery showed a suicide rate that was 19 times higher than the general population. Declaring gender reassignment surgery to be medically necessary is not only inaccurate, but dangerous. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery. Again, that's frc.org/surgery.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As senior director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Here, Mr. Arnakis discusses the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones sitting in for Tony Perkins. Hey, wasn't that a great segment? Congresswoman Claudia Tenney of New York. She's first time on the show, new to Congress, and talking about the economy. You know, some people, they don't think that number on Wall Street doesn't matter.
No relevance at all. It's just another round number. Everyone's going to put a big number or big attention to it, but it's just a number.
Yeah, just a number. Just a number. Right. Well, you know what's not just a number? The people who suffer persecution across the world because of their religious beliefs. The State Department has released its latest Countries of Particular Concern report. It's a list of nations who are the worst violators of religious freedom. Some of the nations Secretary of State Tillerson redesignated include Burma, China, Iran, North Korea, Sudan. I was in South Sudan a few years ago and saw some atrocious stuff there and the folks there fighting for freedom. Saudi Arabia. The secretary also placed Pakistan on a new list, a special watch list for severe violations of religious freedom. Well, with us now is Christina Arriaga, vice chairwoman of the United States Commission on International Religious Freedom. Christina, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you for being with us on this Friday afternoon. Let's first discuss the countries that continue to be a major threat to religious freedom. Are there any new countries on this list?
No, unfortunately, these are frequent violators of religious freedom. There are countries that violate human rights across the board, and we are actually disappointed that the Department of State not only failed to meet its legal deadline a month ago, but also did not include six additional countries that we at the United States Commission on International Religious Freedom feel very strongly should also be included in this list. And the reason they should be included is that once the State Department designates these as countries of particular concern, they're actually consequences for these countries when it comes to commerce, when it comes to their economic relationship with the United States, unless the State Department turns around and issues waivers to these countries.
Can you name a few of them?
Sure. The six additional countries that should have been included are the Central African Republic, Nigeria, Pakistan, Russia, Syria, and Vietnam. even though Vietnam was designated a country of particular concern from 2004 to 2006, the State Department has failed to do so in the last several years, and as a result, the people in Vietnam and the people of all these countries have suffered tremendous consequences.
You know, back in 1990, I actually spent 3 weeks in Vietnam on a mission with a team of diplomats, and you know, the underground church is alive and well there, but the persecution, you're right, that nation, they persecute their Christians, and it's good that that is on the short list.
The persecution of Christians around the world is something that we should continue to talk about. Over 73% of Christians live in countries where they are persecuted. Mm-hmm. That is a vast majority of Christians around the world. And this is something that we must continue to highlight and to talk about openly.
Well, keep pushing. I was there. I've seen it with my own eyes. Now, the Trump administration recently cut aid to Pakistan, and it seems the days of rewarding the countries harboring terrorists might be over, and it's good to see that. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, absolutely. And as you know, in Pakistan, we have the case of Asia Bibi, a woman who is a fruit picker who in 2010 got into an argument with some of her neighbors about a glass of water, and she was sentenced to death. And every year we are hoping that Pakistan will release her, but now she has become a symbol, unfortunately, for repression in Pakistan, and she continues to be in jail. Just last summer, one of the hearings that was supposed to take place was denied. So we remain very concerned about her fate and the fate of many Christians in Pakistan.
Now, Christina, I understand that you were in Turkey and got to see Pastor Andrew Brunson, who has been imprisoned since he got arrested in October of 2016. He pastored a Presbyterian Fellowship Church there in the coastal town of Izmir, did I say that right? And has been held since October of last year. You got to see him. Give us an update.
That is correct. We were in Istanbul, an official mission for the United States Commission on International Religious Freedom, and we were told that within 24 hours we would be given permission to go and see him. So we flew from Istanbul to the coastal town of Izmir, where he had pastored for 23 years. We spent a very restless night there, and then we drove out to the prison of Kirklar, where he's being held, which is about an hour from Izmir. We went through security, and we met him in a visiting room that was covered in black foam with a formica desk in the middle with one pen. We waited there for some time and heard a lot of loud clanging, and sure enough, the door flung open, and in walked a very slender Andrew Brunson. He's lost over 50 pounds since he was imprisoned.
Wow.
My colleagues and I are the first and only Americans to have seen him, besides the consular officer who visits him regularly and his wife. Most of the visits with his wife are conducted through plexiglass. They're only allowed to see each other face-to-face once a month. But he's holding on strong, and unfortunately, he's in a terrible condition in prison. He is in a cell with two other cellmates. He's never allowed to leave that cell. No one is, except to once a week when he gets to see his wife or the consular officer. In the prison systems in Kirklar, in Turkey, in fact, you're in your cell. There's no dining hall. There's no outside exercise. There's never a reprieve from that. And he was a surreal 1 hour. He could not believe that a NATO ally would do this to an American citizen. And the charges have yet to be filed.
Well, thank you for that update, Christina. We're out of time, and we have a lot of listeners that will be praying about that situation. In calling on Congress, we can do that to encourage that release. Christina Arriaga, Vice Chairwoman of the United States Commission on International Religious Freedom, thank you so much for giving us an update on our program today.
Andrew Brunson's greatest fear is to be forgotten. Don't let him be forgotten. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you so very much. Well, coming up next, a public high school in North Virginia brought all of its students into the assembly hall last month to hear from a transgender crusader. We'll talk with Kathy Ruse, Senior Fellow of Legal Studies at the Family Research Council, after the break.
Pro-Life Con is FRC's digital action summit celebrating digital pro-life activism. Join us live via webcast on January 19th from FRC's headquarters in Washington. At this year's conference, you will hear from political leaders, bloggers, journalists, and activists, as well as testimonies from families and individuals who chose life. You'll be empowered to better reach your own communities by learning from those who are at the cutting edge of the digital pro-life movement. Tune in Friday, January 19th at prolifecon.com.
Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers. The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue. If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
It's Friday. You ready for the weekend? Wall Street, it's rocking. But some, they don't think it matters.
No relevance at all. It's just another round number. Everyone's going to put a big number or big attention to it, but it's just a number.
Yeah, just a number. Just a number. It's a number that a lot of us are happy about. And there are numbers, a number of things that are going on across the country that we're not happy about. This past December, transgender crusader Amy Ellis Nutt, she spoke at an all-school assembly at George Mason High School in Falls Church, a city in Northern Virginia. Nutt is a Washington Post reporter, an author of Becoming Nicole, a book about a boy who, quote, identified as a girl as a toddler and his puberty suppressed as a child, and was castrated as a teenager. Joining us now is Kathy Roos, Senior Fellow of Legal Studies at the Family Research Center. She's following this story. Kathy, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be with you.
Well, I'm glad to have you here, too. Not real excited about this particular topic. I read your column, very good, by the way, and your husband wrote a very good column on this topic as well that obviously is not getting covered. Tell us about it.
Well, we just learned about it, actually. This public school in the city of Falls Church, right outside of Washington, D.C., apparently had, during school hours, you know, during instructional time, had a school-wide assembly where this Washington Post reporter came and really lectured the students on the transgender agenda propaganda. It is not clear there's a lot that we don't know about it. We don't know whether students were offered an option not to attend, but there is no indication that, but the speaker herself kind of quipped during her lecture that, something about, well, thanks for coming, but I know you're required to attend.
If I could say something, Kathy, you had mentioned that in an email when we talked, and I'm a 30-year investigative journalist. Well, guess what I did? I called the school.
Oh, good.
I called the school. They were very, suspicious of me and my questions. But I asked. I said, "Were these kids required to go, where the students required to go, and were parents notified? And she said, of course the parents were notified. And I said, was this a required event? And she said, no, but I didn't find out what the options were. So I just wanted to see, and I would need to follow up and verify that. But if I'm typical when I was that age, to get out of class to go to an assembly, it was, yeah, buddy.
Well, yeah, and of course, just the social pressure put on kids. You know, you don't want to be the one guy saying, oh, I don't want to attend this school-wide assembly when everybody else is doing it because the school is setting it up as an official event. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't have happened during the school day, for sure.
No.
This lady can lecture anywhere she wants in Falls Church and in, you know, the D.C. area, and she can draw whatever crowd she's going to draw, and I'm quite certain she would draw. You know, left-leaning government types would love to come hear her speak about her book. But the problem with this, the big problem, was this was done at a public school during the school hours, and it was completely one-sided. Nothing in her talk suggested that there was any risk to transitioning on the part of children who maybe experienced gender confusion. Her comments about puberty blockers were so cavalier, where in truth, this is a very, very serious and very controversial path to go down for kids. I mean, the medical community is highly divided, is hotly divided on whether children should be given puberty suppression hormones and then later cross-sex hormones. I mean, we're seeing that people looking into it are finding out that this can stunt a child's growth. Mm-hmm. And there have been no scientific longitudinal rigorous scientific studies on these kind of drugs given to kids who are growing and developing. So it's horrible. It's horrifying how cavalierly she discussed these issues. And, you know, the opposite side was not presented for sure during this assembly. And my prediction is, of course, they're not going to bring people to this school who regret their sex changes, or pediatricians who are cautioning that this is very risky behavior and are advising against puberty-suppressing hormones because of they can render kids sterile for the rest of their lives. A child is making a decision, or really, you know, maybe being pushed to, we don't know, that mm-hmm. will have lifelong consequences. It's horrible.
Now, in your column, which is excellent, by the way, you say at the end of the talk, Nutt was asked two student questions written on index cards. And what is gender dysphoria, and how does the transgender community respond to the idea that they are glorifying the mental health condition known as gender dysphoria? And you say that was a good question. We're just about out of time. Can you hold on with us and come back after the break? Hey, you're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins, and we're talking with Kathy Ruse about a very important topic here on transgenderism. We're going to continue this conversation, and then we're going to take your phone calls here. We're going to go to the hotline, and that number is 866-372-7234.
Or a tweet or an Instagram picture save a life? At Family Research Council's 13th annual Pro-Life Con Digital Action Summit, pro-life activists from around the country will gather to explore the impact that digital media has on the culture of human life. Join us via live webcast from Washington, D.C. the morning of Friday, January 19th from 8:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. At this year's conference, you will hear from political leaders, bloggers, journalists, and activists, as well as testimonies from families and individuals who chose life. At the intersection of cutting-edge technology and a passion for the lives of the unborn, you'll be educated and empowered to better reach your community on social media. With this innovative information, anyone can make an impact for the pro-life movement anytime and anywhere. Also, see live coverage from the National Mall as the March for Life gets underway. Tune in on January 19th at ProLifeCon.com. Again, visit ProLifeCon.com for more information.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. Across the nation, transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. The problem for these activists is that the evidence is not on their side. In 2016, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services examined 33 studies on the subject and declared that there was not enough evidence to determine whether gender reassignment surgery improved health outcomes. One study found that those who had undergone gender reassignment surgery showed a suicide rate that was 19 times higher than the general population. Declaring gender reassignment surgery to be medically necessary is not only inaccurate, but dangerous. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery. Again, that's frc.org/surgery.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
You've tuned in to Washington Watch, powered by the Family Research Council. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. It's indeed a pleasure to be with you. I'm going to be here for the next several days while Tony enjoys needed time away with his family. Having a very compelling conversation with Kathy Ruse. She's the Senior Fellow of Legal Studies at the Family Research Council. Kathy, thanks for hanging on with us.
My pleasure.
Let me ask you a question. We've been talking about this transgender crusader, Amy Ellis Nutt, who spoke at school assembly at George Mason High School in Falls Church, a city in Northern Virginia. I was reading your column and your husband's column, and you were, I think your husband talked about making the decision to be homeschoolers. And what do you say to the parents that aren't homeschooling, but they're conservatives, they're Christians, and they have their kids in public schools? I mean, this is just so disheartening. It's like turning your kids over to the lion's den every single day. And I Googled this topic. I didn't see much on it. I also went to social media outlets. A lot of times this sort of thing, you'll find parents that are upset talking about it. I didn't even see that on Facebook. What do you say to that? Maybe there's a parent that's really struggling with this idea of homeschooling. Maybe they don't think they're qualified, can do it, have the time, and they're dealing with these kind of issues in the public schools.
Well, let me approach that from another angle. And what about the people who just can't afford to not send their kids to public schools and single parent families? And you know, some kids truly are, you know, trapped in public schools. Well, parents have the right to request curriculum of a school in advance, and especially in areas like sex ed curriculum. And all parents really should ask for lesson plans, should ask for in advance, I mean, and demand it. They have the right to get it in all 50 states. To demand what their kids are going to be taught in some of these sensitive areas. and to then opt their kids out if they object to the material, and much of it's objectionable. Now, of course, we're still not sure how much, whether the parents were given full information about what this assembly was going to be about, but demanding, even demanding kind of as a standing, you know, every month, okay, what's up this month? You know, you've got to really spend a lot of time tracking what the schools are doing and trying to find out in advance and asserting your rights. And that can go a long way because people are busy and these schools kind of do what they want, and they're taking advantage of people's inability to, you know, make tracking their work a full-time job. So, but there are rights that parents don't know about, and the right to see these lesson plans in advance, especially on sensitive topics like sex ed. Parents should take advantage of that. Homeschooling is becoming more and more popular, and there are homeschooling consortiums all over the place now. It's so interesting to see how parents who have kind of left their careers to become to homeschool their own kids, but also then to become the teachers in these consortiums. You have, you know, Latin specialists and physics specialists and mathematicians and all these parents that are kind of lending their efforts to homeschool their kids and other kids in their area. It's really beautiful. It's not for everybody, but if you find out that your school is really doing objectionable things, it's something to explore. It's come a long way. The homeschooling movement has come a long way in the last 20 to 30 years. And there's a lot out there that's sort of already in place. You know, you don't have to become an expert in all of these subjects because your local homeschooling co-op has those experts, and they charge a tiny little fee. And if you can get your child enrolled in, you know, the Spanish class, you know, in the town next door that a homeschooling mom's teaching, you know, it's great. It's really great. So I just think homeschooling is such a hopeful option.
Yes.
But many, 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 many kids are going to remain in public schools. And, I just can't say enough that parents have to be vigilant. I wanted to make one point. I didn't want to say goodbye without making the point that, and you'll never get this in the mainstream media, but that this whole notion of transgenderism in children, the idea, and, you know, they're going to be the mainstream media and public schools are going to treat this subject as if it's race. You know, a child who declares that he or she is the opposite sex of his biology, they're going to be, oh, okay, well, we can't say anything. It's like race. You know, we're going to have to treat it like race. Here's the sort of the dirty secret. It's a scientific fact that up to 98% of boys and up to 88% of girls who think that they are the other sex will grow out of this gender dysphoria, and they will accept their biological sex if they're allowed to naturally pass through puberty. Up to 98% of these boys, and there are more boys that are experiencing this, at least from what I read. So that means only 2% will persist in this gender confusion past puberty. If all these schools start affirming their opposite gender when they are kids, and they're doing it now, they're being pushed to do this, will that impede the ability of these little kids to go on and accept their own biology later? So you see, this is very sinister. This is not just tolerance. This is participating in potentially preventing these kids from accepting their natural biology later. So it's very sinister. It's very problematic. And it affects far more than the tiny percentage of kids who even experience this confusion, because it sows confusion in other kids. And these are vulnerable ages. You know, these preteen ages, kids are very vulnerable.
Well, Kathy, very informative. Thank you so very much. There are resources at frc.org.
Yep.
Where people, parents, can find a lot of this information that you've been talking about. Kathy, thank you. You have a blessed weekend. Thank you for what you do. Thank you for the information you provide and being in the trenches. Appreciate you being on Washington
Watch. It's an honor. Thanks for the opportunity to chat with you about it.
All right. Thank you. That's Kathy Roos, Senior Fellow of Legal Studies at the Family Research Council. Let's go to the phone lines, 866-372-7222-34. Have you encountered this kind of battle? Do you have a child or students in public schools? How are you keeping on top of what's being taught to your kids? What are you seeing in your school district, in your community? Are you seeing similar sorts of ideology that are being taught? We'd like to know these things because we follow up and we get our own policy experts on them, and we help communities to engage and know how to be in the battle and how to push back. Give us a 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234, and share how you are engaged in the battle. How are you kind of writing on the teachers that have the attention of your students, the administrations, and how they are teaching your children? Do you know what's being taught? Do you know what the curriculum is? Do you meet with the teachers on a regular basis so you can be engaged in that process and you can know? Because I can tell you this, most kids, you know, once they get home, they want to play, they want to do something else, they want to see their friends, and they don't want to talk a lot about what's going on. So you've got to be engaged. And that's, you know, I've shared some stories about my mom and the dysfunction in my family here on this radio show. But I will tell you this, she did ask me a lot of questions. She asked me, how am I doing? What did you do today? Tell me about your day. She did do that. And I've got to give her credit for being engaged in my life in that way. Let's go to David in Tulsa. David, welcome to Washington Watch.
Good afternoon. It's not so much I don't have kids, so it's not so much from the aspect of school. But coming out of a homosexual background, I just wanted to say that, you know, nothing would make me embrace my homosexuality more than for somebody to cut me down. And many of us can relate to this scenario with some, you know, you sort of go toward the thing that people say you shouldn't do or be or whatever, or somebody to act like they're spiritually superior to me. Mm-hmm. But what I'm getting at is, you know, from the church aspect, you know, we'll have to accept these people as they are, as I'm sure that you're saying anyway, when they come to church. You know, it's like we're talking to a guy that's actually a woman or vice versa. You know, they're not going to come in all cleaned up. We'll get nowhere in helping them or evangelizing to them or speaking to their hearts. If we have to accept them the way they are and go from there. And whenever we encounter them, maybe a cashier in the store or something, and we know that they're obviously different than what they biologically were, give them a big smile, and because you may encounter them somewhere down the line where you can speak to them. And that was all. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, David in Tulsa. Let's go to Kansas. I lived there for 20-some years. Tanya in Kansas, the Sunflower State. How's Kansas these days?
Hi. Cold.
Cold. You know, there's something about Kansas.
It is cold.
There is nothing to stop that wind. It is flatter than a pancake,
true.
And it just blows for miles and miles and miles. By the time it gets to you, it's really cold in the winter, and it's really hot. But welcome to the show.
Thank you.
What's on your mind?
Well, we have three children in the public schools, and as conservative Christians, we know that they're going to hear things, and they have, that are against our beliefs. And so we prepare them beforehand. You know, we tell them, you're going to hear things that aren't biblical. Mm-hmm. If you have questions, you need to come to us. But also, as part of an educated person and being able to witness to other people, you need to know what they're thinking and how to argue against it.
And you know, I'm just trying to think back. There were a lot of new ideas I heard in school, in elementary school, middle school, and high school, but they were just new ideas. I don't recall hearing I don't recall being bombarded with the social messaging that's happening today. And I can only imagine how confusing that's got to be for students and children that don't have the kind of grounding you're talking about.
Yes, it is. I'm sure it's very confusing. I see it in their, you know, the literature they read in their reading classes, the social studies, even just the liberal tent that the social studies program has, you know, it's very different from when I was a kid.
Now, do you meet with the teachers, and do you ask your kids what's going on?
I do ask my kids what's going on. I have encouraged them in the past to go ask their teachers if they have questions. For example, when my daughter was a sixth grader and they were studying early history, and she was excited when the Jewish/early Christian chapter was coming up, because she had learned about it in Bible school and at home, and then they skipped that chapter. Mm-hmm. And she told me about it, and I said, well, ask your teacher why. And her teacher told her that it was the district's policy, and she wasn't satisfied with that, so she went and asked the counselor. Mm-hmm. And got the same answer. You know, I should have gone up there and said something, but I was proud of her for how she handled it. Right, you know, she was 12 years old, and she did such a great job.
Well, Tanya, thanks so much for calling and sharing those experiences. I'm sure there's some people that benefited. Thanks so much, and you have a blessed weekend. We got time for one more caller, I believe, here. Let's go to Ezra in Louisiana. Ezra, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, thank you for having me. I appreciate your show, and I listen to you daily.
Wonderful.
I just wanted to say that I really think that our kids are being neglected in a sincere way, and that they haven't identified who they are, and they're getting targeted by this diversity movement, and they're not really being heard. And I think that's part of the reason why they're identifying with some of these things that may not really be true with their inner self and their search. And I think that's kind of why they're falling susceptible to it, and it bothers me.
Yeah, it's maybe a little similar to why kids join gangs. They're looking for some kind of identity. They may not be getting that identity at home, or they're looking for some place to connect.
Exactly. And I know when I was a young kid in school, having the name Ezra and you know, being familiar with Christ, it made me kind of an awkward person. I didn't really fit in with a lot of the, you know, movements that were going on, you know, as far as you know, reputation and being in the fad, so to speak. And right. I think a lot of that is even more congested in our schools today. Kids aren't really finding their little clique, so to speak, and they're looking for that, like you said, that acceptance, and I think it kind of pressures them to want to identify with a certain group so that they can feel like they belong.
Well, thanks so much for your insights, and you have a great weekend. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Got time for one more quick call, 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. We've been talking about transgenderism. We've been talking about the Wall Street explosion on the economy today, the Dow hitting 25,000. Had a great conversation about the countries who are exploiting its people the worst. That was a great conversation. If you want to go back and listen to some of these programs, you can go listen at TonyPerkins.com. You can follow Tony on Twitter, at TPerkins. You can follow me on Twitter, at RussJonesSpeaks. It's been a pleasure to be with you this week. I'll see you again on Monday and a few more days next week. But as we journey into this year, listen to this from Psalm 98:1. Sing to the Lord a new song, for he has done marvelous things. His right hand and his holy arm have worked salvation for him.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.